Still got your summer plans? Waiting for your vacation? Maybe you're walking through the historic streets of Charleston, or you want to visit Faneuil Hall in Boston, or maybe you're thinking of heading west. Maybe a trip to Mesa Verde. Well, if you're on the fence for going to any of these places, you might want to firm up those plans. Do them this year rather than holding them off for when the kids are out of the house. A recent report from the Union of Concerned Scientists points out many iconic American places that could be at risk from the effects of global warming, with temperatures and sea levels rising and increased risk of storms and fires. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to be talking about your vacation must-see list. Where you should go now rather than later, see it while it is still there. Would a trip to Glacier National Park be just the same? I doubt it. Joining me now is Adam Markham. He's one of the authors of that report and director of the Climate Impacts Initiative at the Union of Concerned Scientists. He's in our New York studios. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Also with us is Andrew Blackwell. He's the author of Visit Sunny Chernobyl and Other Adventures in the World's Most Polluted Places. He's a kind of perverse anti-eco-tourist, I would guess. So he's also here with us. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks. That's fair, I guess.
You know, I was when I thought about this topic, I was remembering back to years ago when I was scuba diving, decades ago in the Caribbean, and I wanted to go back to this fantastic dive site of coral, staghorn coral. I got so lost in this, so much of them, and they weren't there the next time I went back. All the coral in the Caribbean I wanted to see had died. And I told people that if they want to go see some coral, they'd better go see it now because the oceans are acidifying, they're warming up, and they're beginning to die all over the place. So this seems to be the case for the national landmarks, too. Go see them now because they might give us some places that are in danger and why.
So I think we did about 17 case studies, looked at about 30 sites, places like Jamestown in Virginia, which was really where sort of colonial America began when the English came here. That's being eroded away much faster now because of sea level rise and storm surge. You mentioned Mesa Verde, also Bandelier National Monument in New Mexico, which is suffering from really much larger fires than they've seen over the last century and much bigger floods. So it's everything from archaeological sites in Alaska to modern aeronautical history.
I'm Ira Plato. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And in what time scale are we talking about this? The stuff is happening now.
Yeah, our report really looks at things that's already happening. We tried to keep away from scenarios of 100 years from now, but changes that particularly people in NASA or USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey or the National Park Service, have recorded happening now. And it's happening all over the country, all of the coasts, and particularly through the West with the fires.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 844-724-8255 if you've got a place you'd like to ask about or comment on. 844-SCI-TALK is our number. Andrew, are any of your most polluted places at risk from global warming?
Well, you know, I think some of those most polluted places, the reason I went in the first place is because they were at risk some time ago, and we were sort of for different reasons, and we were sort of in a post-risk situation, and I wanted to see what was going on there now. But, you know, this is a little bit related, actually, and sort of just to branch off of what Adam said is this is something that's happening everywhere, and you can frame it in terms of specific places that might be destroyed or might disappear, but also every spot on the planet is going to change in one way or another to some extent or another, so you can see any place you go or any place that you live sort of through this prism of how it's changing. And I think it's important to see those places through that prism.
Mm-hmm. You know, they say that some of the places that are most rapidly changing are at the poles, and certainly the North Pole and the loss of ice there in the summertime, and also the permafrost is softening up, right?
Yeah, I think when we looked at the Alaska site, say the Bering Land Bridge National Monument, where the first humans came into the North American continent, the permafrost is melting there. It's destroying archaeological sites. And there's incredible erosion because there's no seasonal winter ice anymore to stop storm damage on the coast. And so that coast is eroding at 30 or 50 feet a year. And archaeological sites are literally washing into the ocean.
Are they trying to preserve what's there? Instead of leaving it open to visit, get it out so we can don't lose it to the ocean?
First of all, they're trying to find out what is there. We haven't surveyed most of these places before we're even losing them. But I think there's a big discussion in archaeology now. Do we need to get this stuff out of the ground before we lose it? Mm-hmm. Usually they would like to keep it there for longer for future generations to look at.
And that would be true anywhere in the country, right? Not just in Alaska, any of these other digs that are going on.
Yeah, it's certainly true at Jamestown, where water is coming up through the soil and damaging sites, and it's also eroding the coast. That, you know, Jamestown Island in most places is not higher than 3 foot above sea level.
Mm-hmm. Very famous movement of the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse years ago. Are they going to have to move it again?
Well, I don't think they'll have to move Cape Hatteras, but they did that back in 1999 when they didn't even realize the rate of sea level was as high as it is. It took 10 years to make the decision, and now we're going to have to make those kinds of decisions for dozens of other places. Do we have the money to do it or the resources? Probably not.
You know, because here when Sandy came through, Superstorm Sandy, it wreaked havoc at the Statue of Liberty, at Ellis Island, places like those. They would have to keep that up to keep those places up.
Yeah, the National Park Service has had to put a lot of money into rebuilding a lot of the infrastructure at the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island, and they were both closed for months after Sandy. So these are places that, you know, the Statue of Liberty is not going to go underwater, but it certainly may be much more difficult to visit in the future with more storms.
So go visit it now.
Go visit any of these places now.
Any of these places now. Oh, interesting. Talking with Adam Markham, he's author of one of the studies on the Union of Concerned Scientists, also with Andrew Blackwell. Our number is 844-724-8255. If you've got a spot you'd like to talk about, should you visit it now or later? Can you wait? This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about tourism in the face of global warming. My guests are Adam Markham, director of the Climate Impacts Initiative at the Union of Concerned Scientists, Andrew Blackwell, he's author of Visit Sunny Chernobyl and Other Adventures in the World's Most Polluted Places. Our number, 844-724-8255. Andrew, do you have any places on your list that you'd like to see before?
You know, more than anything, I really would like to spend some time in Bangladesh. You know, it's a huge country, basically built on a delta that is going to see absolutely outrageous kinds of change over the next 20, 30, 50 years. And the tragic thing is they're also really not responsible for climate change. They emit something like less than 0.5% of all the global warming gases, but they're going to see displacements of maybe 10, 15 million people. Yeah. And I think just aside from all the beautiful things there are to see there, and there are outrageous tidal mangrove forests, and there's, you know, basically a Bangladeshi Manhattan. I also think that maybe if more of us spent time in Bangladesh and had Bangladeshi friends, we'd be a little more motivated about climate change.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Cody, Wyoming, and talk to Penny. Hi, Penny. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you for taking my call. As a former park ranger at the east entrance of Yellowstone National Park, which is the world's first national park, I commuted from my home in Wapiti Valley through the nation's first national forest, the Shoshone National Forest. And starting around 2000-2001, the beetle kill epidemic happened to not pines in that area, but Douglas firs mainly. And it destroyed between, I would say, up to 50 to 75% of these Douglas firs, over 600,000 acres of the Shoshone Forest surrounding Yellowstone National Park. The same climate change that caused drought and hotter, longer summers and warmer, longer winters has also attacked the whitebark pine in the upper reaches of the park and in the area surrounding the park. Whitebark pine is one of the fall food sources, a very important fall food source for grizzly bears.
So is it the heat itself or is it the beetle infestation that
the Beatles are native. The Beatles are native to this area. They've lived here for thousands, if not tens of thousands of years or longer. But because the climate change, it allowed them to reproduce more quickly and take advantage of the heat and drought-stressed trees. Trees fight off beetles normally with their sap, but they didn't have enough sap. At the same time, we've had these huge fires in 2008, a 70,000-acre fire that stretched from all the way from near Yellowstone's east entrance to Cody, Wyoming, 52 miles away.
Oh, see, Adam
kind of fires continue to happen.
Adam is shaking his head in unison with you here.
I'm nodding my head. I mean, I've seen some of the impacts of the white bark pines in Yellowstone, and what's extraordinary is that although there have been attacks by beetles in, you know, earlier decades of last century, trees that are 700, 1,000 years old are being killed by beetles. So they survived the last time the beetles attacked, but it's the warming has pushed the beetles up the mountains, and it's really affecting those trees, and it's threatening the grizzly bear, which is what people go to the west to see.
Thanks for calling. Let's move around the country and go to Sarah in Elk Grove, California. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. First, I want to thank Peggy for her service as a park ranger. My young children look up to park rangers, and they're junior rangers for the Yosemite Park. And I have some questions about Yosemite. It's really the heart of California, and we go every year. And I have to be honest, driving into the park this year through Groveland, my young family, my seven-year-old, was in tears, seeing just the damage that the recent burn did last year. And so I have two questions for your expert. How long will the falls continue, or the glaciers that feed them? And do you think if we set a timeline, especially on our beautiful Yosemite Falls, and said, you know, this is going to be dry in this many years, we might be able to motivate human behavior to change?
Gosh, well, that's a difficult one. I don't know the threat to the falls specifically, but I do know that in Glacier National Park, I mean, for 20 years they've been saying that there may be no glaciers left there by 2030, and I think that estimate is coming down as it gets warmer. And you mentioned Groveland. That was that town was pretty much closed because of the smoke from the Rim Fire, which got right into Yosemite during last summer. So we're seeing these huge impacts now there.
Thanks for the call, and thanks for letting us know what's going on in the park there. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
Andrew, what do you think of these places that are threatened? Should they put climate change on the list of things that tell the visitors when they get there?
I think they're perfect places to talk about climate change. I was in Glacier National Park a few years ago, and you know, the visitor center is a lot farther away from the foot of the glacier than it used to be. And I actually was quite impressed by the way they didn't seem to avoid that fact, but actually talk about it. And it was a perfect place for even for families to talk about what's happening in the environment and in the world. So, no, I don't think we should avoid it. I don't know if they should make posters saying, see climate change in action, but...
Well, you know, if you go, you take the trip to Alaska up to the glaciers, the boat tours that take the inner passageway, and you just stand next to this glacier and watch it collapse. You're watching it in action, right? Right there. It's very dramatic.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot that the Park Service could do to inform people more, and I think they're starting to do that, but it's something that probably needs to be rolled out much faster. There's a climate response program in the Park Service, and they're starting to do sort of little videos about climate impacts.
You know, if you look at a map of the glaciers in Alaska, and you watch them retreat over the decades, you could put a marker where the glacier used to be. This is 10, 20 years ago. This is 100 years ago. You know, that sort of thing.
They've done that in Glacier. You can see that on some of the Grinnell Glacier, for example.
Well, speaking of glaciers, let's go to Monty in Traverse City, Michigan. Hi there.
Hi there. I went to Glacier National Park in September of 2 years ago, 2012. And I was really disappointed because it didn't feel like there were any glaciers there. And then I've just returned from Alaska and seen all those glaciers and what they're doing. And in response to what the Park Service is doing, I get the sense that the Park Service in Alaska, mainly down in Kenai Fjords area, is really mapping and showing visitors how far back the glaciers now are. But my thought on going to Glacier National Park is go early in the summer and go soon, because I don't think it'll be there worth seeing in 5 years.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of places that are going to be threatened more quickly. So we talked mm-hmm. about the new national monument, the Harriet Tubman National Monument, where she led slaves to freedom on the eastern shore of Maryland. That is very low-lying marshland that is already disappearing very fast. It was just announced by President Obama a couple of years ago, and already it's one of the most threatened from sea level rise on the East Coast.
Not to mention all the visitors to go to this to Space City, you know, in Florida, the Cape Canaveral and all that kind of place. That is right on the water, isn't it?
Yeah, we looked at all of these space centers and the Langley Research Center, which is where, you know, just after the Wright brothers' first flight, they opened this aeronautic research center in Virginia. And all of these places are right on the water, very close to sea level. Of course, you don't want a rocket taking off over the land, really. You want to put it straight out to sea. So that's why they designed them like that.
Yeah, well, you don't want a submerged rocket either.
No,
it takes a whole different design to do that. Our number is, let's give it out, it is 844-724-8255. You can also call us 844 at SciTalk. What about the endangered species in all of these places? We talked about the trees, but are there animals that are also going to be moving? Or are we losing these animals in these places?
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned the grizzly bear earlier. Yeah. I mean, coming back to Yellowstone, there was a report out just this week about the Yellowstone cutthroat trout, which a lot of fishermen go out west to catch, starting to hybridize now with other trout that are moving higher up the river because the rivers are getting warmer. So there are major problems with species in a lot of these places.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, where else would you like to go? You think you'd better get out there soon.
Well, you know, everyone talks about the Maldives, you know, an island nation, 500,000 people in the Indian Ocean. And the highest elevation on the Maldives, I think, is about 8 feet. So when you start to talk about several feet of sea level rise, that's a place that is really facing it. So clearly, just in terms of a place that may not be there in any form that we recognize, that's definitely up there.
That's about the maximum height of the Everglades too, isn't it? Something like 6 or 8 feet above sea level.
Yeah, I think the Everglades is already losing a lot of land, and of course they've also lost a lot of the freshwater flow that pushes back the seawater, so the Everglades has to be one of the most endangered sites for sea level rise.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phone. Let's see if we can get another phone call or two in here before we have to go to Matt in Charleston, West Virginia. Hi there.
Hey, how are you all doing? I first like to say that all the jobs you guys are doing are fantastic.
Thank you.
And it's just an observation I made going to Daytona Beach as a young child. I'm 51 now, and in these later years that I go, I notice how much closer the ocean is to the walls in front of the motels. Hmm. And I also notice how there's more bacteria problems in the water. Would you say that's due to some of our climate changing also?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for the question. The ocean has risen a foot in the last century, right? About a foot. So 50 years ago, when he started going there, it was half a foot lower.
Yeah, and it's probably risen faster down there in Florida. We have some of the highest rates of sea level rise in the world on the east coast of the U.S., particularly in parts of Florida and up in the northeast as well. So, yeah, you will have seen big changes there. And as he mentioned, the water has got warmer, and that's become a problem for certain bacteria. It's
right.
It's more dangerous to eat oysters in some places nowadays because the water's warmer.
And it's also acidifying in certain places. I was talking about losing the corals. I keep thinking about what coral. You have any favorite coral places you'd like to visit?
I mean, all of them, but I mean the Great Barrier Reef. The Great Barrier Reef is, you know, really the go-to example. I mean, the Maldives, for starters, are built on coral, but the Great Barrier Reef. I mean, we're talking about, you know, a piece of living architecture that's I don't know, is it like 15 miles long or 1,500 miles long? I mean,
yeah,
it's
long.
It's long. It's big, and you know, so that's not a place that's endangered or that's an entire world, really.
Right.
And along with an entire ecology that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Our number 844-724-8255. We're talking about tourism and where to go while there's time to see this stuff on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Ira Flato here with Adam Markham, Andrew Blackwell. Do you see any public awareness of this? Is it growing, do you think? People are beginning to talk about climate change or global warming. I think climate change is sort of a euphemism for global warming.
I think what people are talking about is the impacts that they see. You know, and I think climate change has become politicized, but people are talking about flooding. They're talking about more wildfires, flash floods, and we're experiencing people getting worried about how those things are changing. And so I think they look at it locally rather than globally. And, you know, what our job really is to sort of make the link so that they can understand that this is a global trend.
Let's go to Catherine in San Jose. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi there.
So I have a question for you. I grew up going to Yellowstone all the time, and I'm wondering what kind of impact you think climate change will have on many of the park's thermal features.
Any comments on that?
I don't think I know the answer to that.
Me either.
Excess. Do you think it's going to dry up because it's going to lose water? Is that what you're saying, Catherine?
Well, yes. You know, I can see it going both ways. Is if you have less ice and there's more water, is there going to also be more groundwater because of that, which could impact those? Or do you think it'll be kind of a reversing where you see them dry up?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Good question. All right, we'll look into that.
I mean, that's part of what's interesting about this is there are so many things that are unpredictable that you don't know which way it's going
to go. And it's cool, so to speak, that people are asking these questions.
And there certainly has been a decline in snow on the mountains in the West, and we've got shorter winters now. So there's a big change in sort of the water regime, and I think that does affect how some of those hydrological features in Yellowstone act.
Mm-hmm. There's a tweet from Annika Garcia who says, interesting conversation, but a bit ironic. How much carbon would it take to fly us all around the world to see these places? I guess there is a trade-off.
Oh, that's a good question. I often wonder why sometimes traveling less isn't part of our environmental consciousness. I think it's because we value travel so much in terms of what it means to be a cultured or educated person that it's a very hard thing to say that we should just give up and stay home.
We used to call that mass transit.
Right.
Yeah, I think
I can't disagree, really.
The great thing about America is you can see many of the national parks by going across the country by train, and so that's a wonderful way to get to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Adam, that unfortunately you're going to have to be updating your list all the time as the threat?
Yeah, I think this is actually, you know, the first time we've done this report. It's really the tip of the iceberg, and we've had so much information coming in since we published it about other places that are under threat that, you know, I think for every case study we did, we could have done 20.
And we didn't even mention Hawaii, did we?
No, Hawaii, the west coast of the Big Island, has some pretty extraordinary sort of several hundred-year-old native stone architecture, which is right on the coast and being threatened by waves.
All right, thank you very, very, very much. Good luck to you. I guess Adam Markham, Director of Climate Impacts Initiative, Union of Concerned Scientists, Andrew Blackwell, author of Visit Sunny Chernobyl and Other Adventures in the World's Most Polluted Places. Thank you very much.